This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. We've talked in months past about how some of Michigan's Black families took stock of the pandemic moment and decided to try homeschooling their children. A recent article in the New Yorker magazine wrote about several Michiganders who had this experience. It also talked about the optics of the largely white, largely evangelical homeschool movement and whether Black children and families might find financial support and some shared goals within it. With us today are Bernita Bradley, an advocate, author, and social entrepreneur. She's the Midwest Regional Delegate to the National Parents Union. She's a founder of Engage Detroit Homeschooling Network and also operates The Village, a company that does recruitment work. Also with us today is Keisha Gray, educator and advocate. She's a founding director of Our Children Count, which provides coaching and advocacy for parents. She's also the host of Openly Gray with Keisha Gray, a show that streams and podcasts on the Motor City Woman Radio Network. Both of them have homeschooled their kids. Keisha, Bernita, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you.
Bernita, the last time we talked to you, you laid out your interest in homeschooling and sort of how it got started with your daughter, Victoria, asking you to do it. But I don't think we talked in much detail about what Victoria had been through. Can you tell us about some of the experiences she had? That, you know, what leads a child to say, can I school from home?
Yeah, so one, bullying issues had happened extreme at some level in her school. So my daughter's pre-K education was like what any parent would want to dream of. Just like she was learning, she really was up to maybe about second grade. And she started having these repeat occurrences of either bullying or having teachers who really just didn't get her, right? And my daughter being a lover of education, like literally genuinely loves teachers, but her experience began to be tainted by teachers who had these different perceptions of them as students. So my daughter found herself in the assistant principal's office at third grade, actually reporting a teacher. Ironically to me, I'm thinking the principal's calling me, telling me my daughter's done something, or when I walked in the building, you know, she wanted to talk to me and I'm looking at my daughter like, what have you done? Like, what is this about, right? Mm-hmm. This is a first. But it was my daughter reporting a teacher who was calling the students her East Side ghetto babies. Mind you, this is a Black teacher who we sometimes think would be more compassionate to children. But what my daughter has experienced through most of her life is not just white, but Black issues in schools. And it became too much for her in fifth grade. Myself, I was just like, you know, well, I don't think I have the wherewith to do it. Like, I really don't see homeschooling the way I would want to homeschool. And I'm working, I'm doing all these other things. So let's just fight for you to get what you need at school. And that's the mode that I was working from for a while until the pandemic happened. And my daughter told me she was going to drop out of school if school was the same way it was from March to May, when she only had interactions with one teacher at her school that she was enrolled in. And that was the dance teacher. She struggled. And teachers were constantly telling them, I've emailed you this. I've uploaded this into this program. Go on. You should know how to do it. This is where we left off at. And if you need me, see me at this 1 hour window that I have a week, which is called my prep time. Mm. I was like, yeah, no, this is not right. Knowing Keisha and seeing her remarkable work with her children, I was like, okay, Keisha, what do I do?
Yeah. Well, Keisha, I know that you had some investment in more traditional education. You used to work at a charter school. Can you tell us the story of what led you into homeschooling?
Well, I guess it goes way back. I am the child of two educators, and my grandparents before were educators and headmasters. So I yield from the Caribbean, right? And my parents, particularly my mother, always had a dream to educate us on the road. She wanted to buy an RV, have us educated in it. That was her dream. But even when you have a dream or a vision like that, the pressure of understanding that public education or what we've always done is what we should be doing is really, and life is why we choose these things. So I had that dream planted in me to homeschool, but I just didn't do it right away. So my kids attended a charter school in Detroit. I also taught at the charter school. And when I left that charter school system, I was the director of parent and community engagement. In my work, I really saw some of what Bernita describes, but I also realized that parents had visions and dreams for their children that weren't rooted in reacting to poor schools. They just wanted to make choices that were in their children's best interest. And I wanted to be a conduit for that change. So I knew that my work had to surround supporting parents and helping them understand the power that they have to choose to educate their own children.
Mm-hmm. Keisha, we've talked to Bernita about how much more interest she saw from people this year, people who said, how are you doing what you're doing? How do you describe, Keisha, what happened this year? I mean, is this a case of a dam breaking and all this pent up, you know, unmet need in education, finding a funnel and finding a place to, you know, to vent into homeschooling? Or how do you describe what you see?
Well, absolutely. I think that Black families always understood that schools as a system were not necessarily designed to serve our whole Black child, right? So you would find schools that were penalizing Black children, expelling children. So we had these conversations before there was a pandemic. When the pandemic happened and schools closed and parents were at home, it wasn't homeschooling, it was schooling at home, because that's what happened. For many parents, they saw some of their children start to really thrive by not being in environments that were oppressive to them, right? So many of those parents were like, hey, if my child is thriving like this, I might want to continue this journey. And that's where you saw the wellspring. Parents saying that, like, if my work isn't an issue and I don't have to go to work and I can get support through programs like Engage Detroit, maybe I can do this. And so our work has been to reassure parents that, yes, you can do it.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, I'm talking today with Keisha Gray, educator, podcaster, and founding director of Our Children Count. Also with us is Bernita Bradley, an advocate, an author, and Midwest Regional Delegate to the National Parents Union. You know, one of the things that I didn't realize and that was informative about the New Yorker article is some of the roots of America's homeschooling movement and just how much early energy and early focus came out of the evangelical white Christian movement. And actually, I was talking to a white friend who was homeschooled recently, who told me that, you know, her parents really didn't tell her about the civil rights movement or the Holocaust, and that the history book had a picture of Jesus on the cover. Looking at the materials and textbooks and curriculum out there when you first got into this, I wanted to ask, well, Bernita, but really both of you, did you feel like you were entering a space where you had what you needed to tell your kids what you really wanted them to know?
So let me first start by saying homeschooling for Black families didn't start from evangelical churches. Mm-hmm. That movement whatsoever. Black families have been forced to homeschool their children since slavery time, right? Like, Black families have always taken it upon themselves to take their own rituals and their own rites and say, I am going to educate my children. The systems don't do that well for our children. So it has nothing to do with this savior complex of we're mimicking something white people have done. Never. Right. The other aspect of it is that Black people don't need this tool or framework from a white person to understand how to educate our children. We actually disconnect from that same analogy to make sure our children have their own roots, their own culture, their own history actually at hand whenever they need it. And that's partially what we did to Engage Detroit. We pursued our history. We even went as far as to do DNA tests so that our children can use history to research their own family, right? And when we tell the story of Black homeschoolers homeschooling based on a white perception, we take the power from what Black people are actually doing. This is like the resistance. This is us saying, if you won't reinvent and reimagine education with all the millions and billions of dollars that go through this system that says that you're supposed to be educating our children, we'll do it ourselves. And we disconnect.
Yeah. By whatever means are available.
By whatever means, right? And I shouldn't say whatever means, because I know the New Yorker article insinuated that we were like this prop for the Koch brothers, to be quite frank, and that we were this group that was funded intentionally to take children out of public schools, when what the New Yorker never explained, that over 70% of our children were charter school students, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. These were families who were tired of systems failing their children, and we decided, let's help, you know. But there's not this one framework where we were just like some entity that the Koch brothers or any organization said, if you do this for us, we will give you money. No. And also, there was funds of politicians who came to us and asked us to take. I denied, specifically because I knew they had an agenda. Mm-hmm. And most of the funding that we received, I interviewed the people when they came to interview me, because I want to know what is behind your motive and what is behind. And that's anybody. That is anybody. Like that article, I hurt my families. And I felt like I let my families down because I invited them in. I vetted them. And I felt like you twisted this story to make us these unintellectual, guided by funding, puppets on a string to actually make homeschooling look good when parents were tapping out.
Well, let's, Keisha Gray, what about that? What do you think this year has made possible for the many iterations of what homeschooling can look like for Black families?
Well, I think it's really important to always think about why we're educating our kids the way we are. Any parent that I coach, I ask them to have a vision, what their vision is for their child. And we talk about that, right? And I think in this country, we also have to ask ourselves, why are bigger entities so invested in educating Black children? And when I sit with that and I think about a country who had slave codes, who's one of the first slave codes that they had in this country was that Black folks should not be able to read or write. Those same systems cannot then be committed to being so invested in the well-being of her children, right? So I start there. I think that for parents, it's like the story of the three little pigs. I'm going to use that analogy. When schools shut down, a lot of parents didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah.
They were building a house out of twigs. Like, hey, let's pull this together.
That's, you know, exactly, that's exactly what it felt like. Yeah.
Right. That's when Bernita and I started talking, like, hey, what are we going to do for parents? Let's start putting this house of twigs together so that we can at least have a place for our kids. And sometimes when you looked early in the early stages of the pandemic, that might have meant sitting on your couch. You might not even have had a laptop. Pardon me. You might have had a cell phone, right? Twigs. Mm-hmm. The next stage was getting to a more stable environment, which is where Engage Detroit came in. Hey, let's get desks, or let's put some things in place where we know we're going to be here for a second. Let's create a stable environment. That was the coaching for parents. How might that look? Do you have a space where your child feels comfortable learning? Let's figure out what kind of things your child likes to learn. Let's provide support for you. As the world starts to open up again, there are some people who will go back to the brick and mortar that they knew. But there will be a group of parents, large proportion of Black families who will start to build their own brick house. You know, and that's the story of the three little pigs. And it is building a brick house where you decide, I have a vision for my child, and we are on this path to choosing our educational journey together. And I think that's so powerful.
What might that homeschool house of bricks look like? Can you give us some examples?
Absolutely. So I know of the parents that I coach, when kids got home, when you're in school and your agenda is given to you by teachers, you may not be passionate about the things you're learning because you really don't have, you're not empowered in schools to select what you want to learn. That is given to you. When we talk about homeschooling, homeschooling, like Bernita said, is sort of the umbrella loose term that we use for all other types of schooling. Homeschooling could be road schooling. I'm on the road in my RV. It could be unschooling. I do math or wherever I am, life is the school. It can be all these things. So sitting down and really supporting parents and helping their kids be a bigger part of that conversation. So when I have two children, my two youngest, they were homeschooled. And at first it was really hard for them to find their legs, but I kept asking the question, what is it you're passionate about? What brings you joy? What are the things that you love learning? And it was from their leadership that I supported them in getting to what they needed. I don't know if the New Yorker article really presented that notion of resistance and choice in a way that really paints the picture that our kids have agency over their educational choice. It's their journey. Our job as parent coaches, and for me as a parent, is to really support the transitions that they'll make.
Yeah. You know, Bernita pointed out that we're talking about a cohort of parents who are definitely engaged and who are concerned about their children's education. What challenges do you see ahead for them as they're out there with their kids, you know, building the house of bricks them on their own? And what do you think that they will need to be successful?
I think part of it would be resources.
And feel free to chime in, Bernita.
Yeah. So resources, one, right? The community support to acknowledge that partnerships are key, right? Like in our white communities, like the Niles Community School District, they have partnerships that they built with the YMCA, their local colleges, all these type of things. Like when you see a homeschool student come through other cities, they're not questioned. Like, what do you mean homeschooling? Like, what do you do at home? Like, these children are let into programs just like normal public school or whatever students, right? But in the city of Detroit, what we noticed in creating the partnerships that we created over the last year is that a lot of people questioned that. Like, you mean your virtual schooling? No, I'm homeschooling. What type of curriculum are you? How are you proving what you're doing? Like, they start doing this thing of judging our choices, right? And choice should never be judged. So that's been the biggest challenge to me. Not so much as how the families can handle it, but how community is perceiving homeschooling.
Bernita Bradley, she is an author and an advocate and the founder of Engage Detroit Homeschooling Network. We've also been talking with Keisha Gray, founding director of Our Children Count and host of Openly Gray with Keisha Gray. Ladies, thank you so much for talking with us today. We appreciate your time very much.
We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.